and welcome to a new episode of the Computomics podcast. Today we will be whipping out the proverbial microscope and talking about the microbial dynamics in food ecosystems. Our guest is a food scientist and has worked as a scientific advisor to the Hellenic Food Safety Authority, advising them on microbial hazards. She is professor at the University of Turin, and her research there focuses on the microbial ecology of foods. Our guest is also a member of the editorial board of the International Journal of Food Microbiology and Microbiology Spectrum. Welcome, Kalliopi Rantsiu.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
The pleasure is ours. And thank you also for allowing me to call you Kelly for the duration of this interview. Kelly, we like to start with an icebreaker in these interviews. And I know that both your research and your work before deals with food and fermentation and wine. So I was wondering now if you think we have this interview maybe in a restaurant or at your home table, what food or wine combination would you like to serve or would you see us having?
Okay, that's a great question to start with. So I would probably do a shrimp pasta with some feta cheese. I'm originally Greek, so feta cheese is a must. And I would have a glass of white wine, maybe a Chardonnay from California. That would be my choice.
Sounds delicious. I kind of regret asking that question now. getting hungry. I feel my stomach growling. Very, very tasty. As a professor at the University of Turin, or Torino for the Italian-speaking audience, what is the focus of your research?
So the focus of research is microorganisms in foods. So let me just give a brief connection to something completely different, something completely out of science, that is a movie.
I love it already.
So a Western movie, I don't know if you probably recall it, the Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so microorganisms in foods can be considered as good, as bad or as ugly. So the good microorganisms are those that are doing the fermentations and are producing good types of foods. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the wine, I mentioned the feta cheese. So these are products of fermentation. The ugly are those that will spoil our food. So for sure you have had in your fridge fruits that go bad. This is mm-hmm. spoilage caused by microorganisms. And the bad, those that are causing disease to humans. Mm. So the focus of my research is to understand how these different groups of microorganisms interact with each other in the food, what makes them survive longer or die off earlier, because these aspects will then be useful for the food industry in order to produce food that is safe for the consumer and food that is of good quality. Good quality that is an area that can be considered subjective. It depends on the characteristics of and the habits of the consumer, but some elements of quality are actually can be considered universal. So the goal of food microbiologists is to monitor the microorganisms during food production and intervene, understand how they can intervene in order to produce safe food of high quality. Mm-hmm.
I mean, a very important task, as you've aptly described. In my research before this interview, I read that you are especially interested in combining culture dependent versus culture independent approaches to describe the microbiota and how, I guess, its function works in foods. Can you explain what that means? Like, what can we envision when we hear this?
So the traditional way by which microbiologists studied microorganisms in foods is based on the use of culture media. So you probably have seen Petri dishes, maybe also on TV these things are shown. So Petri dishes where you have a substrate. It's called a substrate. So a medium where microorganisms can actually grow. So we take them out of the food and we try to reproduce them in vitro. So this is a culture-based approach. Mm-hmm. This approach has some limitations, some biases, because not all microorganisms are actually able to grow on these culture media. Okay, so the traditional way by which microbiologists have worked has given us a good idea of the microbial ecology of foods, but not a complete picture of the microorganisms that are present. Only those that are able to grow in culture media. So about 25, 30 years ago, culture-independent approaches have been developed where we do not anymore try to culture them in media, in substrates in the lab, but we extract the nucleic acids of these microorganisms that are present in the food and we analyze directly these nucleic acids. Mm-hmm. This means that we are not introducing this bias of cultivation. We are bypassing this bias of cultivation and we are looking directly into the signature that the microorganisms are leaving in our samples with their DNA or RNA.
Mm. This is, you're describing a development that has already happened for a number of years now. What would be a current project where you're employing this combination or maybe this different approach?
Yes, so these methods were developed, this way of thinking, because it's a way of thinking, of approaching scientific questions, was developed something, at least in food microbiology, something like 25 years ago. And there have been technological evolutions that do not modify the approach. The approach is always the same, but the methodology of analyzing the DNA is improved. Okay, so while at the beginning we had some what are called gel-based methods, today we have sequencing methods, DNA sequencing methods. Okay, so it's a development in the methodology. And a project where we are actually applying these approaches is called SAFI. It is a European funded project. SAFI stands for Safe Food for Infants. Mm-hmm. And in this project, as the name implies, we are focusing on safety. So understanding how pathogenic microorganisms may contaminate foods, foods for infants, and how we can understand ways of controlling these microorganisms. Okay. And within this project, our group at the University of Turin is actually active in applying culture-dependent and culture-independent approaches to understand the microbiota during processing, during production of infant food.
And this project is in the middle right now, I assume. Like you're in the middle of the research phase. Is there, are there any results or preliminary results that you can already share or feel comfortable sharing?
So the project is ongoing. And again, one of the objectives is to understand how we can integrate next generation sequencing technologies to understand the microbiota, the evolution and the dynamics of the microbiota during processing. And we have taken as example specific companies that are producing infant food. And we have been able to characterize the microbiota in the processing plant in great detail. And we have been able also to understand how this microbiota fluctuates in time. So the sampling was performed throughout more than a year. And we have seen how the microbiota within the processing plant fluctuates with time, with season. And we are in the process now of correlating the composition of this microbiota with specific microbial groups. We consider them target microorganisms to understand if we can identify some composition of the microbiota that specifically indicates to us that the target microorganism may be present in a specific environment.
Ah, right. So it sounds to me like you're trying to identify, it's almost like a signal system to maybe find earlier have an early warning system. So I don't know, would you shut down the processing or be able to find issues sooner with food that might be bad or ugly to go back to the original image, right?
This is exactly what we want to do. And you picked up exactly the essence of it. So the idea is that with this information, the company is able to do or to make a decision that is science-based and evidence-based decision to intervene if it is necessary. So yes, it will give a preliminary signal to indicate that there may be a need to intervene at some point, somehow. This is a subsequent step. How to intervene, when to intervene will be other questions that we may want to ask. But the point is that we identify an area that may require more attention. Mm-hmm. And this is done earlier, and this is done by using scientific evidence. Mm-hmm.
So if I understood you correctly, this is now obviously part of this research project. So there is some kind of research set up in a number of processing sites. How would this work if, you know, once your results are processed, are published, the idea would be to have this kind of system in place in all processing plants that create or that produce infant food? Is that correct?
So, yeah, this is another very interesting point that you are raising, whether or not the information from this specific study can actually be extrapolated, if you want, and applied to other situations. Mm-hmm. In this project, we are developing a proof of concept that this can actually be done. Mm. And we are providing the tools and the approaches on how it can be done. The data that we produce do not necessarily apply to all processing plants. Each processing plant will have its own microbiota, and we'll have to investigate this microbiota individually in order to be able to make decisions, as we said before. Mm-hmm. So, yes, proof of concept within this project, results that verify that this can be done, but the data are not necessarily extrapolated to other situations.
So it's more about extrapolating the process, if I understood you correctly. So you try to reproduce the process by saying, okay, you do the analysis first. Once you have your base analysis, you can then go into the second step and try to create your individualized early warning system for your processing plant.
Exactly. And within this project, there is the goal also to develop what are called decision support systems. So we feed in data, for example, from culture independent methods. And the output is, again, a warning. This is a situation that may require attention. This is a situation that goes smoothly. There is no need to intervene. Or this is a situation that we need to investigate a little bit further. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there will be this decision support system that will help companies that want to invest and apply these technologies in order to facilitate the interpretation of the data and the decision-making process.
That's super exciting. So Safe Food for Infants project, what's the runtime? When can we expect these results and helpful methods and systems to be ready?
So the project is running for about a year more. So we still have a year ahead of us. Some data will become available already within the coming months through scientific publications, but also through training, seminars and training activities for food business operators, but also for scientists that want to be involved in this process. So there will be a gradual release of information and update of the work that is being done within SAFTI. Mm-hmm.
This seems to me quite unusual to have a research project have this form of dissemination as it's going on, to have seminars and workshops for, yeah, I guess the industry or other people that aren't directly involved with the research. How did that come about?
So this is, again, an element to which the consortium has given great attention, the dissemination and the engagement of stakeholders. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to be able to involve as much as possible companies, also in order to understand what are their needs and right. what are the gaps that need to be filled in from their side. Because as scientists, we have some ideas, but of course, these ideas have to be complemented and integrated with mm-hmm. the needs of the companies. So we want to hear the companies and try to develop something or adjust what we are trying to develop to their needs. And this is, of course, done with the companies that are part of the consortium. They have been very helpful in giving us their input. But through the training activities, we would like to get more feedback from other companies that are not directly involved with the project. So yes, this is an important element of the SAFI project, the dissemination and the engagement of the stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, you did say a year. So obviously, as our audience, I'm sure, is aware, there is sometimes a bit of a gap between the recording of a podcast and the publishing. So just to be clear, this would be mid-2024, like end of summer 2024, more or less?
Yes, yes. Okay, perfect. Exactly. This is the period, yeah.
Super exciting. We're definitely going to put the links in the show notes so people can follow up on your publications and the kind of intermediate results from the project that are quite substantial from what you've just shared already. Besides SAFI, the Safe Food for Infants project, what other studies or projects do you have going on maybe that you'd like to share?
So other projects, another important project that is actually at the beginning right now is a project that concerns more fermented foods, the other big area that is of particular interest to me. And it is of particular interest also to consumers. There is a big trend, especially at European level, of consumers that want to do their own fermented food at home, no? Mm-hmm. So, and why is that? Because we have scientific evidence that fermented foods are good for our health. So why not actually do it at home and
maybe have fun with it, save some money by doing it yourself? There are all these reasons that come into it as well, right?
Exactly. Of course, there is a need for particular attention because, again, fermented foods at home need to be tightly controlled, or fermentation processes at home need to be tightly controlled because there are risks for the consumer if they are not performed correctly. But the project that I'm referring to concerns fermented foods in general. There are many European partners involved, and our group is focusing on fermented olives, so table olives. Yes. Mm.
we're talking about food almost too much. I'm getting hungry. Fermented olives. Okay.
And here what we are trying to understand is what is the influence of the microbiota during primary production. So in the we are going in the olive orchard, and we are trying to characterize the microbiota of the orchard, how the microbiota of the orchard is influenced by the season, by the year, by the conditions that are agronomic practices that are performed in the orchard, mm-hmm. and how this is influencing then the fermentation process, so the microorganisms that will take over the fermentation process. And eventually will have an impact on the quality of the fermented food, the fermented olives, but also on the health aspects, the health promoting aspects of fermented olives. Mm-hmm. And we want to go a step further and construct microbial consortia that promote health for the consumer. So they have health benefits for the consumer. And we want to use this microbiota during the fermentation process.
Now, when you say promote, what does that mean? Do you input them, you actually like manually, or I guess in a machine produced way, you input them into the process, or you try and foster the ones that are already there? Like what can mm-hmm. What does promote mean in this context?
Okay, so traditionally, fermented foods, and especially some types of fermented foods, such as cheese, for example, or wine, to a certain extent, fermented sausages, they are artificially inoculated. So the raw material that is used for the fermentation is artificially inoculated with a microorganism that is called a starter culture. Mm-hmm. So this is a concentrated microorganism that we know has been previously selected for its characteristics, and we inoculate it in order to take over the fermentation. In other fermented foods, this is not happening. So what happens is that we have a natural selection of the microbiota that was originally present in the raw material. For example, in sauerkraut or in kimchi, oftentimes there is no inoculation. So they are the microorganisms that are present in the raw material that will be selected because we are adding the salt, because we are adding the brine, or because we are removing oxygen. We are changing some physicochemical parameters that will give the opportunity to a subset of microorganisms to develop and ferment. Going to the origin, I went a little bit off here.
No, this was great for understanding, though.
So going to the original question that you asked me, yes, the idea is that in the fermented olives now, in this project, we are not inoculating a single microorganism, but we are inoculating a microbial community that is carefully mm-hmm. selected for certain technological characteristics or for certain health-promoting characteristics. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we will study these microorganisms, try to understand how we can put them together in a microbial consortium, and then inoculate this microbial consortium in the olives at the moment of the harvest in order for them to develop during fermentation.
Interesting.
And this will have what we expect out of this process, that the quality of the olives is high, and that potentially we have microorganisms at the end of the fermentation that are that may have some health promoting effect, so mm-hmm. a benefit for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. You spoke earlier about how technology has changed and how that has changed some approaches, or maybe infused them or put them to another level. I'm wondering now about this process here as well. In how far do you use maybe DNA sequencing here as well, or different kind of high end modern technologies to go through that selection process and also maybe the introduction process?
Yes. So we heavily rely on next generation sequencing technologies within this project. First, to understand the microbiota in the orchard, as we said before. So a description of the microbiota by a high resolution technology such as the next generation sequencing. And we will use these technologies also when we will try to construct the consortia. Because we intend to use sequencing to understand what are the characteristics of these microorganisms at genomic level. So we will study the genomes. Mm-hmm. From the genomes, we will infer what are potential functions mm-hmm. and try to mix together microorganisms with different genomic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. In order to construct this ideal microbial consortium. So yes, also in this project, we heavily rely on next generation sequencing. Of course, we have to combine culture-dependent approaches as well, because if at some point we want to inoculate these microbial consortia in the olives, we have to have them in our collections. We have to have these microorganisms. So we never forget the classic microbiology that is fundamental in capturing also the biodiversity, the microbial biodiversity, and conserving mm-hmm. this microbial biodiversity. And we are also moving towards new ways of conserving microorganisms, not anymore as a pure culture, but as consortia, microbial consortia. So we want to understand how we can actually conserve entire microbial consortia. But this is another project.
I get the sense we could keep going and going because they are related and super fascinating and super relevant for sure. But I suggest you just come back maybe in a year's time or 2 years' time to talk a little more about SAFI, which will be through that stage at least, and possibly any developments in the conservation techniques. This was lovely, Kelly. Thank you so much for being here and sharing all of this with us.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It was a real pleasure to talk about these fascinating aspects of science. Thank you, Anna.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.